Steve Norman. U.S. Secretary of State Mike Pompeo has named Ford Vice President Stephen Biegun as special representative to North Korea. The executive and former national security staffer is joining the administration at a time of intense focus on U.S. efforts to force North Korea to dismantle its nuclear weapons program. Mr. Pompeo spoke about his appointment.
Steve is taking the reins of a great team effort. The State Department has already done excellent work in implementing and sustaining the pressure campaign, putting together the first ever leader-level summit in Singapore, and laying the groundwork to hold North Korea accountable to the promises that Chairman Kim has made.
At Ford, Biegun oversaw the carmaker's international government relations. U.S. National Security Advisor John Bolton says he warned his Russian counterpart not to interfere in the U.S. midterm elections in November.
I made it clear that we wouldn't tolerate meddling in 2018 and that we were prepared to take necessary steps to prevent it from happening.
The U.S. has already imposed economic sanctions against Russia over its interference in the 2016 U.S. presidential election. An American mother brought back from detention camp in Syria is being charged with willingly aiding the Islamic State. Samantha Elassani and her four children were back in the U.S. Elassani is accused of providing material support and of helping two other individuals join IS. This was supposed to be the poll that set Zimbabwe free from the long-time, increasingly oppressive rule of Robert Mugabe, but the July 30th election has only produced protests in which security forces fatally shot at least six people. Legal challenge is up in the courts. This is VOA News. President Trump has begun to speak publicly about the possibility of being impeached, the way Congress can start to remove a president from office. He said he does not understand why he might be impeached since he has, in his own words, done a great job. Impeachment talk has increased over the past 2 days after Mr. Trump's former campaign manager, Paul Manafort, was convicted on 8 counts of fraud by a federal court. Also, the president's longtime attorney, Michael Cohen, entered a plea in federal court admitting he paid hush money during the final days of the 2016 presidential campaign to two women who had affairs with Donald Trump and that he did so at Mr. Trump's direction. Meantime, the U.S. Attorney General Jeff Sessions has hit back at President Trump after he criticized Sessions' running of the Justice Department. We get that story now from AP's Sagar Magani.
Sessions has long been a Trump target, and on Fox and Friends, the president all but said Sessions has been a disappointment since the beginning.
I put an attorney general that never took control of the Justice Department, Jeff Sessions.
He says Sessions only got the job because the president felt loyalty to him as an original supporter. Sessions responded he took control of the Justice Department the day he was sworn in, and its actions will not be improperly influenced. Influenced by political considerations. Sagar Magani at the White House.
Hurricane Lane soaked Hawaii's Big Island, dumping 30 centimeters of rain in 12 hours as residents stocked up on supplies, tried to protect their homes against the state's first hurricane since 1992. Storm has been downgraded to a Category 3 with sustained winds of 201 kilometers per hour. U.S. National Weather Service warned some areas could see up to 76 centimeters of rain before the system passes. Dave Gay is the governor of Hawaii.
Want everyone to continue to be prepared and respond. Stay in contact with friends and families. If you feel shelter in place as the first option, if you feel that you're not in a safe place, then seek shelter in one of the many emergency shelters that have been opened.
Storm is passing to the south of the Big Island of Hawaii and is due to brush the Pacific Island state as it moves south of the island chain. However, officials warn that even a glancing blow could do significant harm. A weakening typhoon is brushing Seoul, South Korea after battering the southern part of the country with heavy rain and high winds, leaving one person missing, large numbers of damaged buildings, canceled flights, and power outages. Get more news at our website, voanews.com, and on the VOA mobile app. I'm Steve Norman, VOA News.
morning, Africa. Welcome to Daybreak Africa from the Voice of America. I'm James Bote in Washington. Today is Friday, August 24th, and here are some of the stories we are covering. A Ugandan military court Thursday dropped treason charges against Member of Parliament Bobby Wine.
This court hereby terminates the proceedings against Honorable Robert Kulani. Before this court, you are accordingly set free unless being held on other charges.
That's General Andrew Guti, chairman of the military tribunal in Guru, Uganda. Soon after the military exonerated him, Bobby Wine was charged again with treason before a magistrate court. Journalist Alex Atuhairi will join us to explain. Opposition leader Chisa Besigye will also join us to explain why he was arrested and detained. And there are claims and counterclaims of renewed fighting in South Sudan.
There was a lieutenant general that was sent from Juba. And the violence continues. So they attacked us, and we repulsed, putting them back up to their barracks in Fort Geng and killing their brigadier.
Colonel Paul Gabriel is the deputy military spokesman for South Sudan's rebel SPLA-IO. New ambulances as Sierra Leone prepares to launch the pilot phase of a national emergency medical service. And Malawi's film industry is winning awards despite not having cinemas. Those stories, plus Samson O'Malley's sports and our listener of the day, are coming up on Daybreak Africa. A Ugandan military court on Thursday dropped treason charges against Member of Parliament Robert Kyagulanyi, also known as Bobby Wine. He had been charged in the military court with treason for illegal possession of arms and ammunition. Here's General Andrew Guti, chairman of the military tribunal in Guru, Uganda.
Continuing to try the accused persons on the same facts of another case in a civil court will cause injustice to the accused. Two, that it is fair and equitable that the accused person be tried in civil court where he is to be charged with other suspects who are not before this court. Three, this court hereby terminates the proceedings against Honorable Robert Kulani. Before this court, you are accordingly set free unless being held on other charges. We so rule done at Guru this 25th day of August 2018 under my hand and seal of this court.
That's General Andrew Guti, chairman of the military tribunal in Guru, Uganda. Soon after a military court dropped treason charges against him, Ugandan parliamentarian Bobby Wine was charged again, this time in a magistrate court, with treason and jail in a civilian prison in Guru. He and his co-accused are expected back in court on August 30th. Alex Atuhairi is the publisher and editorial director of an online Ugandan publication. He says the Ugandan government bowed to local and international condemnation of its treatment of Bobby Wine and his co-accused.
Bobby Wine today presented before the military court for his court hearing, and the court sitting did drop the charges in the military court. There was a letter from the director of public prosecution which showed that Bobby Wine charges emanated from the same charges that the other 32 colleagues, including three MPs, who had been separately charged in the civilian court. So the director of public prosecutions asked the military court to drop the charges against the MP, Bobby Wine. But apparently, I think the government felt under pressure from the public because, first of all, not only the charges in the military court looked fabricated because he was apparently charged with possession of firearms, but also everybody thought it was wrong that if you are charged a civilian in the military court, it is.
So you are saying perhaps the charges in the military court were dropped because the Ugandan government came under immense public pressure, even international pressure, because just of yesterday we were talking about neighboring Kenya where journalists and civil society groups there demonstrated on Thursday.
Yes, that's right. Both a lot of local pressure and international pressure.
Alex, were you the journalist, were you able to see Bobby Wine? I know you are not medical people. What was his health situation?
Well, he was on crutches and he did not have
those reported bruises on the face and what have you, but he was on crutches and he looked weak, perhaps confirming that he was not really handled very well during his arrest.
Alex Atu Hairis, the publisher and editorial director of an online Ugandan publication. He was speaking with me from the capital, Kampala. The former leader and presidential candidate of Uganda's opposition Forum for Democratic Change says President Yoweri Museveni's government is an illegitimate government that is determined to use force to remain in power. Chisa Besigye was arrested Thursday and jailed for what authorities call preventive arrest. Besigye tells me Ugandans will have to come together to free themselves.
The case for which I'm arrested is preventive arrest. So apparently they arrested me to prevent something, which I don't know. But this, as you know, is not really the first time. I've been arrested in a similar manner very many times. Indeed, today, many leaders found their residences barricaded by the police, including the Lord Mayor of Kampala, a number of MPs, and some senior FDC party officials found their homes barricaded, the same way I found my home barricaded. So when I went out to inquire into why my home was barricaded, I was just violently grabbed and thrown into a waiting van and driven at top speed to a familiar police facility, which is about 20 miles out of Kampala.
I'm assuming that with elections in Uganda, that there's some semblance of democracy. Can a government just arrest a citizen on the basis of, quote, preventive detention?
Well, an arrest is one of the, I think, smallest infringements that this government commits. It kills people with impunity.
Dr. Besigye, I think shortly before you were arrested, you were quoted in the papers as saying that the government of President Museveni was an illegal and illegitimate regime. Part of that quote seems to suggest that you are saying that the Ugandan people should not put their hopes in election, in choosing their next leaders. Could it be that's why you were arrested?
No, I mean, I've always said that, and it is a truism. First of all, as you know, no leader of our country has ever assumed office because of an election, including General Museveni, who has been in office now for, this is the 33rd year. He did not come into office through an election. He bombed his way into office. So the fact that Ugandans don't have a vote is not a matter of contention. It's the reality. And what we are dealing with, indeed, the violence we are now dealing with of members of parliament who have been thoroughly brutalized was as a result of a parliamentary by-election in Arua. So what I am saying is that indeed an election cannot remove a military dictatorship, an entrenched military dictatorship like that that is led by General Museveni here in Uganda. And that therefore Ugandans must definitely simply stand up and peacefully protest until this government goes. If that amounts to an offense, I have absolutely no problem standing before court and defending myself. But as you realize, no charge has been preferred against me. So all that is done is simply to abuse our rights and to stop us functioning as political actors in this country.
Dr. Chisa Besigye is former presidential candidate of Uganda's main opposition Forum for Democratic Change. He was speaking with me from the capital, Kampala. You're listening to Daybreak Africa on the Voice of America. I'm James Barty in Washington. Today is Friday, August 24th. Daybreak Africa time is now 14 minutes past the hour. Despite last year's signed ceasefire in South Sudan, at least 7 people were killed and dozens others wounded Wednesday, according to both parties, in fighting between army and opposition forces in northern Leer State, which was formerly Unity State. This comes as the parties are expected to sign on Monday next week in Khartoum the recent peace deal. Dimo Silva Aurelio reports from Juba.
The government and rebel forces clashed Wednesday morning in two separate areas of Kwarjing and Gwit, a few kilometers outside Bentiu, the capital of northern Lekki State. SPLA-IO Deputy Military Spokesman Colonel Lampol Gabriel says government forces launched an attack on his forces and killed three SPLA-IO fighters and injured five others.
There was a Lieutenant General that was sent from Juba and to make sure this issue continues, the violence continues. So they attacked us and we refunded. Putting them back up to their headquarters, or make their barracks in Fort Gang and killing their brigadier and nine others.
SPLA military spokesman Major General Lul Roy Kwong says four SPLA forces were killed, not 10.
Three officers who lost their lives. One is the late Brigadier General Benjamin Gawkot Machar. Until his death, he was the operations commander for forces loyal to First Vice President Gerald Obama Ngai. Bang.
Kwong insists the rebels engaged the SPLA, not the other way around.
It was the main military barracks for our army. It was attacked, and the place is called Quirgen. The area is called Quirgen.
Both Kwong and Gabriel accused the other side of trying to gain more territory on the ground just days ahead of the expected signing of a final 2015 revitalized peace agreement. Kwong calls the attack the latest in a series of violations to the cessation of hostilities agreement the warring parties signed in December last year and called on peace monitors to investigate the latest clashes. South Sudan in Focus was unable to independently verify the claims and counterclaims of the two warring parties. For VOA News, I am Dimo Silva Aurelio in Juba.
Angolan President João Lourenço has concluded a visit to Germany, where he lobbied for German investment. Veteran Angolan journalist Mario Alpar Weiss says Mr. Lourenço's visit was a success.
The big thing is the Angola finance minister sits with a representative of German Commerzbank, a loan of $500 million to Angola, which will support not only imports from several equipments, but also investments in infrastructures, equipments in the industry. And apart from that, Mr. Lourenço also have got a promise from the German Chancellor Angela Merkel of support in terms of defense. Germany is ready to send to Angola some ships of vigilance to the at the coastline, at the long Angolan coastline, especially taking in attention to the terrorism threats at the Gulf of Guinea.
Mario, I know the president was stressing investment in Angola. I was reading another article where some investors don't seem to be happy with the government so far. They're saying that the government is not moving very fast to liberalize the oil industry.
Yes, it happened recently, a major change, because the Angolan government made a public announcement saying that the country will set up so-called National Petroleum Agency, which in the near future will have the responsibility to give licenses for oil concessions. This is a real big move because ends the power of Sonangol during the last decades on this matter. So in the near future, Sonangol will no longer have the legal power to give concessions to foreign oil companies.
The president is about to go to China. There was another article suggesting that the Angolan government is seeking Chinese financial aid to train the armed forces of Angola.
Yes, the Chinese are also recently are trying to improve cooperation in the military. And the Angolan government really wants a more qualified training of troops and special ranks in the armed forces. What we have is some kind of cooperation in terms of the Chinese to set up some military industries in Angola. There's no, until now, a clear vision on that, but I believe after the conversations that Mr. Lourenço is expected to have with his counterpart, Chinese president, and other top Chinese officials, we have more details. Angola government are also seeking now for a further $4.4 billion loan from China.
That's veteran Angolan journalist Mario Alpavai speaking with me from the capital, Luanda. New ambulances are said to be on the road in Sierra Leone this month as a pilot phase of the government's National Emergency Medical Service launches. The new project aims to eventually have 170 donated ambulances and 1,000 staff. During the 2014 Ebola outbreak, the country's lack of emergency transportation services to health clinics and hospitals was part of the challenge to stop the spread of the disease. The Sierra Leone Red Cross head of communication, Abu Tararali, spoke with Ricky Stryer about the country's need for ambulances.
Quite apart from the normal need, which is almost always there, from the recent experiences that we've had about outbreaks of epidemics, we have realized that one of the challenges that we had for adequately or quickly responding to those crisis situations was the absence of the means of transporting patients from their communities to treatment centers, and which is one reason why so much lives were lost during the outbreak of epidemics over the last decade. That is one of the reasons why the need for an ambulatory service in Sierra Leone cannot be underestimated. Just one very strong reason, apart from the normal need for non-emergency need for transportation and referral of patients and people who need ambulance services.
What do you think some of the main challenges will be? It's not as simple, of course, as getting these vehicles, I don't think, to Sierra Leone. I mean, what are some of the challenges? Finding drivers, finding workers?
One fundamental challenge among the challenges that I can note is the issue of the capacity and skills required to manage the service. At least now in Sierra Leone, there is no institution of training where paramedics are trained. Even though we have a college of medicine where medics are trained, but they do not really conduct specialized training for paramedics who should be qualified to manage an ambulatory service. So
after the project expires in March 2020, while an extension may be possible, Sierra Leone's government would probably take over. And there are problems with nurses' payments in Sierra Leone. And when it comes to the health system in Sierra Leone, you know, I think the system that is already in place, sometimes there are serious issues with them getting paid on time or at all. So is there a concern that the infrastructure is not there?
Absolutely, absolutely. That is an area that has to be dealt with also, because operating an ambulatory service does not only stay with having the right equipment in terms of the transportation equipment, the ambulance itself, but it's also about having the right type of facilities in the form of properly equipped hospitals and treatment facilities that should be able to accept, adequately handle the cases that they receive from the ambulances. Otherwise, there is a propensity for patients not to survive.
Do you think there will be community support for this type of initiative?
I think there is a potential for community support for such a project, depending on whether it is given adequate publicity to enable community people, stakeholders, people in the private sector and other interested groups.
That was Abu Tararali, head of communications for the Sierra Leone Red Cross. He was speaking to Ricky Stryer from outside the capital, Freetown. Malawi has no film schools and cinemas, but self-taught Malawi directors have won international prizes for their films, seven of which are nominated for the African Movie Academy Awards this September in Rwanda. As Lamek Masina reports from Blantyre, Malawi filmmakers are working hard to build their own Malawi film industry.
In 3, 2, 1, and action.
Malawian director Flora Suya's first film, My Mother's Story, won special recognition last year at the Silicon Valley African Film Festival in California. And her movie, My Mother's Story, has been nominated for the Best Feature Film at September's African Movie Academy Awards in Rwanda. Despite the international recognition, Suya still struggles to find time and money to make her films. Malawian director Charles Shemjoya has won 7 international awards for his first film in 2009, Seasons of a Life. His latest film is also among seven from Malawi nominated for the African Movie Academy Awards. Lamek Masina for VOA News, Blantyre, Malawi.
Time now for Daybreak Africa Sports, and here is Samson Omale in Abuja, Nigeria. A very good Friday morning to you, Samson.
Good morning to you, James. We begin in Liberia, where President George Weah of Liberia will today induct former Arsenal coach Arsene Wenger into the country's Order of Distinction with the title of the Knight of the Grand Commander of the Humane Order of African Redemption. Wenger was President Weah's first European football coach. My colleague James Botti asked Liberian Sports Minister Zioga Wilson about the significance of the award.
When we were ravaging our own country through the brutal civil George Weah was the only positive thing coming for Liberia. He used his personal resources to help his fellow compatriots who were lingering refugees here. He personally financed the national soccer team, the Lone Star, to participate in continental competition because he wanted a positive image. These two gentlemen, they made that possible by giving him an opportunity. So today he's our president. And he believes while these gentlemen are alive, he must reward them for what they did for him. He must honor them, give them their flower while they are alive. And that's why he made a decision to honor the two gentlemen on tomorrow.
Elsewhere in Ghana, Inter Milan star Kwadwo Asamoah will captain the Black Stars in their African qualifier against Kenya next month. The skillful midfielder has been named in Kwesi Appiah's 21-man squad for the match. However, Black Stars keeper Asamoah Gyan and his deputy Andre Ayew have not been listed in the squad. Staying with Ghana, FIFA recently reached an agreement with Ghanaian authorities to appoint a normalization committee to run football in the country. The decision was taken after a four-member delegation from Ghana met with the World Football's governing body. FIFA has backed out of the August 27th ultimatum issued to Ghanaian authorities to withdraw a court case against the Ghana FA. Former Ghanaian international goalkeeper Abubakar Damba wants men with proven track record to be appointed into FIFA normalization committee.
All inclusiveness. It is very, very important to get the, you know, to tap from everywhere, the minds of everybody, their experiences. Then we can drive the nation forward.
In cricket news, the South African women cricket team is using the 10-day camp at Cricket South Africa Centre for Excellence in Pretoria to fine-tune for their tour of West Indies. Coach Hilton Morenc says their focus is on improving their batting, which will be crucial to winning the three-match, one-day international series.
The World Cup qualifier, the 2021 World Cup qualifier, the first three ODIs, it's going to count towards that. So for us, it's very important to make sure that we start getting points and then start going up on the lock. And because we feel that as far as the squad is concerned, we've got very good cricketers. And all of us realize now we still need to put the performances right and improve on our courses. Consistency as a team.
And that's it for Daybreak Africa Sports. I am Samson Omale in Abuja, Nigeria. It's back to you, James, in Washington.
Thank you, Samson. Have a good weekend. We look forward to your report again on Monday morning. And that is it for this Friday, August 24th edition of Daybreak Africa. We thank you for spending this week with us. Join us again on Monday for more Africa news and features right here on the English to Africa service of the Voice of America. On behalf of the Daybreak Africa team, producer Nicole Beckford, reporters Peter Clotty and Ricky Stryak, as well as sports editor Samson Omale, along with our engineer Dave Magnus, I'm James Botte wishing you a good weekend.
Maxwell, host of Music Time in Africa. Join me every Saturday and Sunday for an hour of awesome African music. Wake up, dance this music. Like to stay on top of new music trends, breakout artists, new releases? Maybe you just love the classic styles and artists of the past. Or simply the sound and feel of a good beat. Whatever your pleasure, you can get it every week right here on Music Time in Africa. So join me on your local FM station, Saturdays and Sundays at 1500 and 2000 UTC.